ocean is haunted. And if you're Samuel L. Jackson, you don't have a ghost of a chance. It's Junk Food Cinema, brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com. Dot dubious research into Alzheimer's.
And I said, why don't we give Shark some super brain? She said, I don't think that's a really good idea. And as I recall, I think most everyone died.
I said, well, this is the one podcast that'll talk about it. We are so excited.
This is Deep Blue Something, right?
This is Deep Blue Something, the podcast all about the song Breakfast at Tiffany's, but not about the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, no. This is the one where our hat is like a shark's fin.
I feel like, yeah, it's the deepest podcast, it's the bluest podcast, and our hats are most certainly like a shark's fin. This is the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast. So good. It just has to be devoured by all of the smartest sharks ever. I am your host, Brian Salisbury. I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host, novelist, screenwriter, lieutenant of Megaforce, a guy who always pisses into the wind, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Yes. You know, I've got to tell you, I had this idea. I was going to pitch a gimmick to you for the podcast. And then I was like, you know, that'd make kind of a shitty podcast. It'd be a great, great gimmick. I felt like we would get we'd get to a halfway point of this where I was ranting about and then I would scream and then just vanish for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, my God. It's my fantasy. Cargill's just gone.
Where you just like talk for the next half an hour.
No,
I was like, our listeners deserve better than that.
You're right, for one. And two, I hate the sound of my own voice, so I kind of need you to not disappear, because, yeah, no, I can't.
I thought that'd be funny, though.
It'd be fucking hilarious. This is not, you must remember this, and I cannot just talk for an hour to listen to this. I hate it right now. Oh, talking too much. At Twitter, Junk Food Cinema. We are also facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. We're also on Blog Talk Radio and
Spotify.com.
Meryl, I swear to God, if you did that every time, you're fucking fired.
If you didn't, you're fucking fired.
Yeah, so decide which one of us is going to get eaten by a shark before the end of this show. The thing is, if you really like this show...
I mean, if you really like having your hat be a shark fin.
If you like it more than people who absolutely know the difference between Thomas Jane and Aaron Eckhart... You can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema.
There's no difference.
There's really no difference. And for as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to more of this. Don't you want more of this? Clearly you do, because you're listening to our episode all about Deep Blue Sea.
In the most advanced research facility in the world.
Wow.
Beneath its glassy surface... A world of gliding monsters.
A team of specialists is working against the clock.
Did someone order the fish?
On an experiment to benefit mankind.
Sharks never show any loss of brain activity as they age.
We're this close to the reactivation of a human brain cell.
But before they can save millions of lives...
Tell me I didn't see that. They recognized that gun.
It's impossible. Sharks do not swim backwards. They can't.
They'll have to find a way to save their own.
Did you feel something?
Jim and I use gene therapies to increase their brain mass.
What is that?
As a side effect, the sharks got smarter.
Somebody, please, tell me what that is.
Your birthday screening this
year. It was, in fact. I got to show, not only did I get to show a 35 print of Deep Blue Sea, I got to show a 35 print of Deep Blue Sea that had never been run before. It was a virginal print.
Really? I didn't know that. How did that happen?
No idea. No idea at all. But I am super excited that it's like, we're going to crack this thing open like it's a fresh beer, and we're going to go to town on Deep Blue Sea. Because I... legitimately adore this stupid fucking movie. It's like, for me, on the on the XY axis of like how stupid a movie is versus how much I love it, this is really high and really far out, because it is a very, very stupid movie that I love every second of and I will defend until the day I die. This is, it's a late 90s giant shark movie in a time when we didn't get a lot of giant monster movies.
From a director not known for quality.
No, and still not known for quality. A director who's best known as making maybe the third best Die Hard movie. Good job on that. Am I wrong? Is it the third or fourth best?
I think it's the second best.
You would put it above With a Vengeance.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I know. I'm in the minority there, but yeah, I've... John Amos, I'll take the...
It's got a great cast. I'm not arguing that at all.
It's a lot of fun. It's been just a movie close to my heart for a long time. So yeah, I take that, but...
There's just a... But for me, that franchise is a bunch of craggy cliffs. It's Die Hard, Die Hard with a Vengeance right close to it, huge drop-off cliff with crags at the bottom to two, even huger craggy cliff... For four.
Oh, four and five, man.
And then there's a bottomless fucking pit of hell to the next one. Like, you might as well not exist.
Didn't I hear they're making a sixth Die
Hard? No, let's just pretend that and Rambo 5 are never happening, and we'll be much happier people for that. And you will be a much happier person if you watch Deep Blue Sea. Because this, much like Die Hard 2, has a pretty fucking stacked cast.
It's kind of insane.
It has so many people. In this movie, they can afford to get Ronnie Cox and not have him say a fucking word.
Yeah, Ronnie Cox doesn't... Yeah, it's kind of an amazing thing where it's like, why? Sam Jackson has a scene with Ronnie Cox. I've always wondered that. Like, back at the time, I was under the impression that maybe Cox was ill. Maybe there wasn't anything for him to do, but... By putting him there and having, since he's a SAG actor, he got SAG credit and could get paid and have insurance.
It could have been
a favor of any sort, or it could have been there was a much longer scene, like an intro where Ronnie Cox talks and then Sam Jackson walks in. And
I just think if you're going to have Ronnie Cox playing the head of a major corporation in an obvious nod to
RoboCop,
he should say something. But I understand what you're saying. Maybe this was a, as we like to say on the show, directing TV moment where you're just trying to keep your insurance. We talk about film directors all the time who go and they'll do like one episode of TV a year now just to keep their insurance. This may very well have been that situation.
There's a lot of things that Rennie Harlan brought to this. This is Rennie Harlan's fucking movie.
Yes.
And he brought some really big ideas to it. One was getting this really big cast. The other was, he's like, look, we're making a shark movie. Like, everybody's going to compare this to Jaws. So what did Jaws have? Well, Jaws rarely showed the shark. Well, we're going to veer away from that, and we're going to show the sharks as often as possible. We're in an age where we have the technology to be able to do that. And so that's what he did. And you see the sharks constantly.
It is a frightening misunderstanding of what made Jaws good, and that's kind of one of the things.
Well, no, he wasn't about it. But the thing is he knew that's what worked with Jaws, but he tried to make it work the other way around. That was because I've seen interviews where he talked about it, because it's very interesting that he chose to do that, because that's been the thing, is that, you know, Steven Spielberg was inspired by both the problems he had on set and the original cat people. And, you know, for those of you that don't know the story of cat people, it was exactly the same thing. Val Lewton took one look at these cat monster costumes and laughed his ass off and said, we can't put that in a fucking movie. They look ridiculous.
And yet Paul Schrader looked at it and went, we need to put them in a fucking movie.
Well, yes, but that is a separate, that is three steps removed from this sidebar.
Put that out.
We are way out on Lincoln back in. We are in Lincoln Park right now.
Yeah.
Val Lewton just said, I know, we'll just shoot them in shadows. and it creeped people the fuck out, these weird cat people that they never saw but always saw in shadow. And so Steven Spielberg took that and ran with it and said, well, shit, I can't show this fucking shark. It's retarded.
Yeah. Like this shark. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. And so we never saw the shark. And so it's fucking scary as shit. Well, he's like, well, that worked. So we're going to have to find other ways to be scary. And so, but we're going to show the sharks and everybody's going to see the fucking sharks because they're coming out to see a fucking shark movie.
Now, and another part of that was that the screenwriter of this movie, Duncan Kennedy, was evidently inspired to write it after he witnessed an actual shark attack in his hometown and said that it always messed him up.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're hanging out at the, you know, you're hanging out down at the soda fountain and this guy is going on a rant and then from out of nowhere, a shark just jumps out and eats him.
His hometown was Topeka, Kansas. Not even sure how a shark got there.
No, no, but a shark just showed up and it fucked him up for life.
Land shark.
Land shark.
He's like, I'm going to make a movie about this.
And as soon as he saw it, somebody was zooming in and panning out at the same time. That was the craziest part. He's like, why is that dolly shot? I don't understand. But yeah, and part of it was that. And then he started saying he had nightmares where sharks were following him down hallways. And that is 90% of this movie is sharks in hallways.
Well, it is also remember that this is the 90s where 90% of movies in the 90s were people outrunning things they shouldn't be able to outrun in hallways. Like, oh my God, the building just blew up. Quick, run down this hallway and jump out the window. Slow motion flame. You know, they outrun fucking water here because that's how water works.
That is how water works. I saw a documentary called Water World all about how water works.
There's even a thing like, you think water's fast? You should see ice.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. No. Like, no. What? Ice is not, and you know, I will mention something that Jason Mantzoukas said on How Did This Get Made, which was that you might say ice moves at a glacial pace, in fact. Like, it is like the least fast thing you could possibly think of.
Unless
what are you talking about?
Rolling downhill.
I mean, that's probably a lot of things besides ice. I just think that saying that ice has like a mind of its own and is really fast, I'm like, I don't know that you were actually there. Now I'm starting to question whether this story is bogus to begin with.
All I know is that ice is cool and that sometimes to melt the heart of stone, all you need is ice.
Jesus Christ. Are you quoting Cool as Ice to me?
I might be quoting the poster a little bit.
Quoting the post? I love that you qualified like, guys, I'm not going to take my time out of my day to watch the fucking movie. I'm quoting the poster, okay?
I've seen the movie. It's literally the most nonsensical tagline of all time. I got into a long discussion online one night with Kumail Nanjiani over the tagline of this poster. He's like, I don't even understand this. Why would you melt something with ice? This is ridiculous.
By the way, we didn't mention on last week's episode about Return of the Living Dead, the tagline for that movie was, first they meet you and then they eat you, which was a tagline written by Matt Groening, who created The Simpsons. I don't know what the fuck he was doing coming up with taglines for Return of the Living Dead, but that's what he did. This movie's tagline, I believe, is Jaws also exists. I'm not exactly sure what the tagline was, but Rennie Harlan did things in this movie like, how big was the shark in Jaws? 24 feet? Our sharks will be 25 feet. And it's like, okay, that seems a little petty. Like, no. We must outdo Jaws. And one of the things that I always loved about this movie is that he literally does a thing where every shark in this movie dies the way the sharks in the first three Jaws die.
Oh, yeah. It's
like
genius.
In succession.
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
Like, yes, that is one of the great things about this movie is literally they end up killing them in the exact same manner, in the same order. It is such a great nod to a movie it's definitely not remaking.
They even pull a license plate from a tiger shark's mouth at the beginning of the movie, and it's the same fucking license plate from Jaws, and they have the same conversation about, must have gone up the Gulf Stream to Louisiana. I'm just like, guys, we know Jaws exists. You don't have to keep reminding us that Jaws exists. We're very well aware that Jaws exists.
You know what? I'm glad you didn't remember the tagline for this movie.
What was the tagline of this movie? Please tell me.
Your worst fear is about to surface.
Okay, stop. okay. No, 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 no. You don't get to just say that, and it's about the. I hate
me being, me showing up to high school in my underwear is about to come up for the one. I don't understand what you're talking about.
It's opening night of a play, and I don't know any of the words, and I haven't rehearsed, is about to surface?
That's terrifying.
What the fuck? You can't. I fucking hate vague taglines. Like, if in the
that was the 90s.
I hate vague. I hate them so much. I don't know why they bother me so much, but they really fucking
This
bother.
Is the thing I'm very worried about, because we have finally gotten over 80s nostalgia. 80s nostalgia is now passé. We're headed headlong into 90s nostalgia.
Oh.
And there's a lot of the 90s that you guys really don't want to remember.
If we're heading headlong into that, I'm going to turn into Nick Nolte from Warrior, just like drunk and quoting Moby Dick, like, "Turn the ship! Turn the ship!" Like, that's going to be me if we head headlong into 90s nostalgia.
Like, it's going to be kids dressing up, you know, in flannel t-shirts and Nirvana, you know, flannel shirts, Nirvana t-shirts, and they'll be outrunning Slow Fire. It's going to be two vague taglines.
To paraphrase Tombstone, "I see a slap bracelet and I kill the man wearing it. Hell's coming with me." Anyway, so Deep Blue Sea. Also an amazing cast. We've already mentioned Ronnie Cox. We haven't mentioned anybody else in this movie. A cast that includes Tom Jane, that we've already mentioned Thomas Jane is in this movie. Samuel L. Jackson. Stellan Skarsgård is in this movie. Saffron Burroughs is in this movie.
LL Cool J.
LL Cool J.
Whose hat is like a shark's fin.
LL Cool J. This movie has one of the greatest post-test screening stories I have ever heard.
Oh, we're gonna get there.
In my life, and when it involves LL Cool J.
Yeah, and Michael Rapaport.
Michael Rapaport in this movie?
Who was, like, on fire at this time. Like, in this day and age, Michael Rapaport is just, he's played a TV dad, and some of you might go, he looks familiar, he's that guy. In the 90s, he was in every fucking indie movie known to man.
He was in every indie movie, and if David Caruso's in a movie, there's Michael Rapaport.
Michael
as well.
Rapaport was always, he was just fucking ever. You could not throw a stick without hitting Michael Rapaport, you know, walking the red carpet for another fucking movie. Like, he just was fucking everywhere. And so he was a big deal in this at the time. You know, Stellan Skarsgård was still going back and forth between, he had just kind of gotten discovered over here, was still going back and forth with Scandinavia, doing Scandinavian films a lot of the time. And then his Scandinavian films started coming over here. And that's how we got Culture.
I just want to point out the amount of Marvel Cinematic Universe situation going on in this movie.
Oh, there's a little bit.
There's quite a lot of bit, because
there might be a certain Norwegian scientist who might be hanging out with a certain head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I feel like this is why we're friends, because of all the people in this movie that have been in Marvel movies, you went for Stellan Skarsgård first. That's great.
Yeah.
But of course, we also have Nick Fury in this movie.
Yep.
We have a Punisher, maybe not the Punisher.
Not a Marvel Cinematic Universe Punisher.
We'll get there. We'll get to that point, I think, as a society, where we accept the Punisher as part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Hey, you know what? Say what you will about the Punisher.
I will.
I fucking hate the Punisher.
The Thomas Jane Punisher.
Yeah. I love the short he did as the Punisher.
Oh, my God. Laundry Day?
Laundry Day.
Oh.
Laundry Day was where it's like, I forgive you for all of that.
Dude.
I forgive you for letting Roy Scheider go out like that.
Deepest, bluest, my dick just got as hard as a shark's fin.
Yeah, Laundry Day's. If you guys have never seen Thomas Jane in Laundry Day, look that up. That is fucking faboo.
But apparently even Saffron Burroughs is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. I did not know this.
The TV show, yeah.
That is fucking crazy, right? Like, that's nuts. How many, like, I mean, it's going to be one of those things for the rest of time where, I mean, like, Scott Pilgrim, I think we've mentioned this before, has half the fucking Marvel Cinematic Universe in it at this point.
Yeah, as in fact, not only are there several members in there, they're all characters that dated the main characters. So,
yeah.
Like, I love the fact that the two characters who are together, their exes are Captain Marvel and Captain America.
That's hard to live up to. Freeze, Beacon Police! You know what it is that I really adore about this movie is that if you look at
the sharks?
Yes.
The fact that they're 25 feet and not 24 feet?
Yes. If you look at it from the shark's perspective, it's an amazing prison break movie.
It is. That's the whole point of it.
Because the humans in this movie kind of suck.
They have it coming. That's the thing. Let's just jump into it. Let's talk about
into that water. Like Saffron Burroughs.
Let's talk about what this movie was supposed to be, why that didn't work, and why it is the great movie that we love.
Yes, sir. So originally, Saffron Burroughs, who in this movie is a researcher trying to cure Alzheimer's and going about it like a fuck... to link it into last week's episode, kind of going about it like a Nazi doctor. Like, I will do whatever it takes to get this disease cured. I don't care about anyone or anything. I'm going to violate the Harvard Compact, and I'm going to make sharks bigger so that I can harvest more protein from their brains, because I'm convinced that because sharks don't get cancer, they must hold the cure for Alzheimer's. By the way, it has recently been proven sharks do actually get cancer. So this movie, the entire predication of this movie has been proven false since this movie came out.
Brian, I'm just going to mention you probably shouldn't go back and watch Jurassic Park anytime soon.
Why? What's wrong with it? Why? What's wrong?
It's been proven that they can't do it.
Fuck you. Okay, that's all I'm... Okay, no. I know...
Whoa. You can't use my trademark phrase.
No. I know they can't actually recreate dinosaurs, but I buy into it at the beginning. I pay my ticket price, and it's like, by the way, before you buy this ticket, you're going to have to accept that garbage science brought dinosaurs back. Okay, fine.
Garbage science cured Alzheimer's.
Garbage science told us that if we make sharks bigger, they also get smarter, which I don't know if you've met a lot of NFL linemen.
I would.
Not the case.
To be fair. The thing about it is they're not just making them bigger, they're making their brains bigger, and so they have to be bigger. They're making them bigger to accommodate the large size of the brain.
God damn it. Stop making me use your catchphrase. I'm not arguing that the brain bigger means the shark can't be bigger. I'm arguing that bigger doesn't equal smarter. That's what I'm arguing.
No, but
that's what the movie presupposes.
No, the science, as they explain in the beginning, is that they're making the brains bigger, and that's why the sharks are bigger.
Yes.
But not that they're making it.
The sharks got smarter is a line in this movie. As a side effect of making them bigger, they got smarter. Fuck you. That's not a thing. You can't just claim that because they're bigger, they know how to turn on an oven. Like, no, that's not how it works. The science in this movie is especially garbage, and I love it so much. Because they're just like, fuck it, we're scientists and we made the sharks bigger, so now they can do our taxes. Like, that's how smart they are in this movie. It's nuts! It's fucking nuts! And she is such a bitch in this movie that she literally...
But here's the thing. She was supposed to be the protagonist.
She was supposed to be the hero!
She was the protagonist.
She spends the whole movie getting everyone else killed and she was supposed to be the hero! What?
Yeah.
Why? Why did they ever think... And then they showed it to test audiences and they were like, oh, we hate her. Because logic still exists in this world, Rennie. And Rennie Harlan went, oh, they don't like her. Okay, you know who everyone does like? LL Cool J. He's just such a cool guy. It's like, yeah, it's literally in his name, Rennie. Like, I don't know, I know English is kind of your second language, but cool is literally in his name.
So maybe we don't kill all of the black men.
Maybe we don't, yeah, because he was supposed to die.
Yeah.
LL Cool J was supposed to die in this movie when he's getting dragged away by the shark. And then that's why in the movie he takes out his crucifix, stabs a shark in the eye with the power of Jesus. And his
Jesus.
Oh my God.
Praise be.
This movie's so awesome. Like,
dude, it really. So here's the thing is what happened to what saved Deep Blue Sea was the exact same thing that happened to The Thing. Where, because for those of you that don't know the story, The Thing was not a good movie. When it was first made, it was a mess. And Carpenter's first version of it was a total mess. He had made an ensemble film and it lacked direction. The studio was really lackluster to it, but they believed in him. He had enough juice. They gave him the money to go back and do 6 weeks of reshoots. He went back to, or 3 weeks of reshoots, I think, and went back to reshoot. And what he did is he restructured it. And he said, well, you know what? Let's make MacReady the center of this movie. It's not an ensemble film anymore. MacReady is now the main character. And so that's what they did here. They pulled the main charactership away from Saffron Burroughs and instead gave it to Thomas Jane's character and then saved LL Cool J.
Yeah. And another interesting thing.
And then killed Saffron Burroughs.
Killed the fuck out of Saffron Burroughs.
Can you imagine being called back to do reshoots? And it's like, oh, well, we're doing reshoots. Yeah, that's a thing you do. What are we reshooting? Well, we've added your death scene. Wait, yeah. But I survived the movie. Yeah, about that. The audiences fucking hate
you. I'm going to go ahead and guarantee that that email that came through that Hotmail account did not mention what they were reshooting when they reached out to Saffron Burroughs. They were just like, we need you to come back. Saffron.Burroughs@CompuServe.net. We need you to come back to the set where we're shooting at this World War II sub-refueling station in the middle of the ocean. We're not going to tell you why. We just need you to come out here. Also crazy is that Samuel L. Jackson was offered LL Cool J's role, but his manager did not like the idea of him playing a chef.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. Like, why is that? Like, that's like, oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Samuel L. Jackson does not play chefs in movies. I'm sorry. That's a no-go. So,
that was very on brand for him because he had so blown up in 94 to 96 that he was able to call his own shots and he would only play black characters that had a sense of power, who had, you know, kind of had some status in society, because he didn't want to go back and play those token roles.
See, and that tracks because he is so powerful in this movie that he silences Ronnie Cox. Can we just one more time talk about the fact that he silences Ronnie Cox?
He's the head of a corporation and Ronnie Cox doesn't get to speak.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. It's like Samuel L. Jackson is not the head of this company. Ronnie Cox is, and still Ronnie Cox says nothing in that boardroom scene where Saffron Burroughs tells that weird story about why she kept telling her dad that her mom had died. He had Alzheimer's. And it's like, okay, well, just don't stop telling him that.
Yeah, she'll be here shortly, Dad.
Yeah, like, she's...
she's out getting cigarettes.
Yeah, like, don't...
For, like, 20 years.
Why would you do that? It's so weird. But, yeah, so it was... This movie was almost... Samuel L. Jackson is the chef that gets eaten by a shark. LL Cool J is the... I guess the guy who survived an avalanche who gets eaten 2/3 of the way through the movie, and Saffron Burroughs is the hero. What is that movie?
That's not a movie we don't talk about on Junk Food Cinema.
That's not a movie that works. And yet, what I find interesting, and again to tie it back to last week, is that Renny Harlin talks about the reason that he kills that Samuel L. Jackson character 2/3 of the way through the movie is a reference to Alien, and specifically to Tom Skerritt's character in Alien, who is a natural leader and you think is going to make it to the end of the movie because he's telling everybody else what to do and then gets killed off by the Xenomorph. So it's a reference to Dan O'Bannon's scripts.
Well, and that is one of the things that I have always loved about this movie. The reason why I've always held a special place in my heart. I went and saw this opening weekend with Jess. This is one of those things where I was just like, hey, there's a shark movie opening this week. And she goes, hell yes. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm marrying this woman. And so we went and saw it and had a blast. The thing that really stuck out to me was it did not kill people in the manner that most films, especially at this point in history, killed people. It was very meta about how it went around the characters. And the thing is, the beauty of this movie, if you do something stupid, you get killed.
Yeah.
Normally in a film like this, if you do something stupid and heroic, you miraculously make it. Not in Deep Blue Sea. You do something stupid, there's a shark waiting for you. The sharks are smarter than the people.
We got a shark for that.
We got a shark for that.
Did you fuck up and make the wrong choice, open the wrong door? We got a shark for that.
And that's what
did you violate the Harvard compacts just to make shark brains bigger?
We got a shark for that. Yeah, but that's the thing, is that everybody, you know, people who do stupid shit get killed. And this movie was very smart about how it killed off its characters. Saffron Burroughs at the end is like, I'm going to save the day. I'm going to do this. Splash, chomp.
Yeah.
Done.
It's such a, like, what I also really dig about this movie is it's super mean-spirited. Like, you could do the Jaws thing where it's very much, like, implied, or, like, somebody gets dragged off, or it's...
No.
No. They kill the fuck out of these people.
They chop Michael Rappaport in half. He becomes Michael Happaport.
Hey-o!
And there's that shot of his legs still floating twitching. Off, still twitching. Oh, it's just, it's creepy. It's delightful.
And you think, and let's talk about the scene in this movie.
The scene?
The scene.
We talking about Sam?
Of course. In his whole speech about how we are not going to fight anymore. We're going to join together and think, we're going to get out of here.
You think water's fast? You should see ice.
It's like, okay, let's, and also, what an unfortunate time to tell your cannibalism story. Let's just save that for later, shall we?
Maybe you don't give a big loud speech next to a portal of water.
Especially if you're talking about cannibalism. Like, I feel like that's Chekhov's cannibalism in the first act. You're gonna get eaten 5 minutes later. Like, that's just fucking stupid. So again, you do something stupid, a shark comes out of nowhere and grabs. But
that's the thing, is Sam Jackson doesn't get killed doing something smart. Sam Jackson gets killed standing next to water while they're worried about the sharks.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't think the shark would pop up and do it, but he fucking did.
And shark.
Maybe you should have been more careful, Sam.
To be fair. It's not Jaws 3D. The shark should not be able to do that. In fact, the shark should not be able to do that should have been the tagline of this movie.
But Brian, the sharks are bigger, and so they're smarter.
Should have been the tagline of this movie. It would have been less vague. The sharks shouldn't be able to do that. And again, I'm going to point out that so many of the human characters in this movie are total dickbags.
Yeah.
That you start rooting for the sharks.
Yes.
And again, it's a prison break.
Except the two characters that you do kind of like. Thomas Jane is pretty fucking cool in this movie.
Thomas Jane, who they give this weird subplot about him being on work release. Like,
oh, I love that. No. I love that subplot.
But imagine how good your parole officer must be that's the gig you get as part of your work release.
Well, no, but that's the thing is they actively went out to him so they could control him. That's the thing is that, you know, you need people to keep your fucking mouth shut, their mouth shut and do what you tell them to do. You get people that need the job. They just need the job.
You're going to get somebody who's not going to talk about the fact that you violated the Harvard complex, like compact. Garbage science.
That's an awful big pile of beers over there,
Brian. Don't worry about it. Thomas Jane also has the best character name I've ever heard in my entire life. Carter Blake. That's a guy who should be writing hard-boiled detective novels.
That's a guy who should have had his own detective series, and we should have the poster, Carter Blake, the man of action. Women love Carter Blake. Carter Blake is the driver, too.
Yes, all of it. I would watch 1,000 movies starring Carter Blake.
Carter
Blake is the new...
Carter Blake is the shark wrangler.
Carter Blake in The Shark Tank Redemption, which is what this fucking movie is if you look at it from the shark's perspective. It's a bunch of sharks who are like, we have been mistreated, and we've been experimented on, and we're breaking out of this fucking concentration camp, and that's what they proceed to do. This is essentially The Great Escape, except with sharks.
Yeah.
I'm down for that. A Donald Pleasant shark, a Steve McQueen shark, all of it. $1,000 I would give to see a movie like that. That's all I'm going to say.
Shut up and take my money.
And again, people die horrifically in this movie. And that scene where Samuel L. Jackson is giving his speech, rousing everybody up, we're all going to get out of here, and is immediately dragged down by a shark, would be horrific enough in and of itself. Then they cut to underwater where he gets ripped in half by two different sharks. Because before that, you're like, you know, he's Samuel L. Jackson. He might be okay.
Have you ever watched the Clerks animated series?
Yeah, yeah.
Every episode of that, there was always a Sam Jackson in the background who would get eaten by a shark.
I don't remember that.
Every episode, Sam Jackson would get eaten by a shark in the background.
You know what I kind of... Sidebar. What I kind of remember about the Clerks animated series is that functionally... It was Community before Community.
It was. No, there's a reason why a 6-episode TV show that failed on ABC, which ABC fucked, by the way. Like, it's totally ABC's fault.
This is my surprise twist.
They showed the fucking episodes out of order. Like,
Jesus fucking Christ.
Like, and the thing was, the show actually had something of a narrative going on, and especially it opens with last week on Clerks and nothing happened. And so, yeah, but it, but yeah, they really kind of boned that show.
I thought that was a running joke. Last week on Clerks and nothing happened.
They would have actual bits from last week on Clerks.
Holy shit.
But it was always unimportant stuff. But it was, yeah, no, the show is a lot of fun. And it was, you know, it sold well on DVD. After the fact, I fucking had it. And me and my wife have been quoting it for going on 20 years
that
now.
That bottle episode that they do where people keep getting locked in
locked in the freezer.
So fucking funny.
But the one that me and my wife always reference is we end up whenever we're, you know, usually after one of us has been drinking, it's like, who's driving? And we'll go, Bear driving. And they'll go, how could this be? I don't know how many millions of times we've made that joke. But yeah, the Judge Reinhold overseeing the court case.
Don't threaten me or I will go as Leonardo for Halloween next year and no one will know what the fuck I am doing.
Well played, Clerks. Well played. I mean, that's another, like, seriously, now that I think about it, there's probably half a dozen catchphrases in my vernacular that have all come from that 6-episode TV show.
In the Lexicargill. Yeah. No, absolutely. Stargrove.
Jedi. Stargrove. Stargrove. Back to the late 90s, early aughts.
Back to the lecture at hand, which is another rap song, not unlike the rap song on this soundtrack.
My hat is like a shark's fin. My hat is like a shark's fin.
I'm going to pull up the fucking lyrics before this show is over and actually just read them to you because...
Well, we're getting... How far are we in this episode?
And mean-spirited deaths in this movie? Stellan Skarsgård. Holy fucking shit. That guy gets his arm bitten off by a shark that's supposed to be under sedation. And then they try to airlift him out. And the winch breaks, and then a shark takes the winch underwater. He's got an apparatus, so he's still alive underwater, and then gets thrown against the window with such velocity that it actually shatters the fucking window and all the water comes in. Which, by the way, a little bit of IMDb trivia, was an accident on set, like all that water rushing at the actors. So that scene where they're all running away from the water as it comes in when Stellan Skarsgård hits the window, that's not fake. They were running for their lives because Rennie Harlan does not run a tight ship when it comes to safety of actors. In fact, there's a scene in the movie where Thomas Jane is swimming with a shark. He really swam with that shark, and Rennie Harlan made sure that all of his other scenes were completed before he did that.
Oh, fuck. He went Toby Hooper on him.
Yeah.
Because for those of you that don't know that reference, the final scene of Chainsaw where he's swinging around the chainsaw, they made sure to shoot that last just in case.
Yeah, he got Gunnar Hansen'd. Thomas Jane got Gunnar Hansen'd, where basically Thomas Jane's like, well, if he gets eaten by the shark, at least we have all of his other footage, and we still have Aaron Eckhart. It's like, you know what? Fuck you, Rennie Harlan.
Molly Hot.
We have a Molly Hot situation going on. Molly already. Hot situation. By the way, we keep talking about how great Thomas Jane is in this movie, and he is. He's like cut out of hero marble, but he doesn't actually kill any of the sharks in this movie.
No, he survives. That's all that matters.
Like LL Cool J, Saffron Burroughs, they kill all of the sharks in this movie. He's just kind of also there.
Yes.
Which is nuts. So this is something I think you'll really appreciate, Cargill. Did you know that Deep Blue Sea was the first movie Stephen King saw after his van accident?
No.
So the first movie he saw after nearly being killed by a van was Deep Blue Sea. And his quote is, "My first trip after being smacked by a van and almost killed was to the movies. I went in my wheelchair and loved every minute of it."
And then I wrote Dreamcatcher. The end.
You know what Dreamcatcher could have used more of? Smart sharks.
Less shit monsters.
Less shit monsters, more smart sharks. Hold the phone. Isn't Thomas Jane in Dreamcatcher?
Yes.
Oh my God, we may have just figured out why Thomas Jane is in Dreamcatcher, and that is fucking bananas.
All right, so I've got some lyrics for you.
Oh, let's fucking do this thing.
My hat is like a shark's fin. then deepest, bluest. My hat is like a shark's fin.
To reiterate.
Deepest, bluest. My hat is like a shark's fin.
My hat continues to be like a shark's fin.
Man-made terror, hungry jaws of death. Y'all don't cross my depths. I'll pause your breaths. I'll cause you to sink down 40,000 leagues, bleeding to death with no arms and short sleeves.
Okay, wait, well, hold on. So, is the insinuation that I was wearing a long sleeve shirt?
Yes, and now it's short sleeve.
So now I have no arms and short sleeves. So that's
and
like,
your hat is like a shark's fin.
Okay, cool.
My world's deep blue. Killers gotta eat too. Looking for human flesh to rip my teeth through. Other fish in the sea, but barracudas ain't equal to half human predator created by a needle. Jet black eyes, baby, they stare while you sleep. When your Titanic sinks, I'm the one you gonna meet.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. What I love about this is imagining, now I'm imagining the monologue from Jaws, where Robert Shaw is talking about what it was like to be on the USS Indianapolis, but he's doing a rap, and he's just like, deepest, bluest, my hat was like a shark's fin, the blackest doll's eyes.
They had the blackest hat. Like doll's eyes.
He was, now you're wearing short sleeves and no arms.
Hearing terrified screams, they surround my team. All you see is trails of blood. Even God won't intervene.
Even God won't intervene.
Nightmares of darkness. My appetite is heartless. Even if we related, you eliminated regardless.
Wow.
In the deep blue underwater walls, half man, half shark, my jaws don't fall.
Okay.
Deepest, bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin. Yeah, deepest, bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin.
Yeah, we've established that both deepest and bluest and my hat is like a shark. So.
That's verse one.
And still.
This is a rap song deserved of a movie that is deserved of this rap song.
The thing is, despite those lyrics, song is still fucking great. The song is still fucking rocks and fits this movie perfectly. And there's a lyric where he says, the ocean is haunted. And I'm like, where is that movie? Where is the haunted ocean movie?
Oh, it's right here in the second verse. Which starts, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Killer sworn to beast, swallowed them in flames. They switched my DNA, tripped me into Cool J. Can't fight. This isn't just a shark. This is a Cool J shark.
Hold on. Hold the fucking phone. Jurgen, pause now. Are we insinuating that there is a draft of the script where they use science to turn LL Cool J's character into a shark?
That would not be a better movie, but I'd still watch it.
We may have to pause this podcast and write that movie because I want to fucking see that movie. Because I've seen the Deep Blue Sea sequel that was like direct to it. It's fucking garbage. I would watch all day, her day, a movie where they turn LL Cool J into a shark, which is actually how that video ends. If you ever Google the video for Deepest Blue as My Hat is Like a Shark's Fin, that's how that video ends, is he turns into a shark. And I never realized until
it's
just
now. It's in the lyrics.
That's the sequel that we never got.
Eat your whole fam, nothing left but a right hand, clinging to a rail, escape attempts fail, you'll never make it home, tear flesh off your bone, walking in undercurrents is a dangerous zone, I'm taking death out, a moment's notice, you wasn't focused, me and my crew strike like some underwater locusts.
That's really mixing your metaphors a little bit, I feel.
Just a little bit.
Underwater locusts.
Take it deeper. Take it
That's
deeper.
That's the sequel title! Deep Blue Sea 2, colon, take it deeper.
Whoa. You're not allowed to say colon in there.
Yeah, you're right. We're accidentally writing the porn sequel. The porn parody to Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea, colon.
Deep Blue, see you next
take
Tuesday.
Take it deeper.
Oh, my God. What were we talking about?
Deep Blue Sea, I think.
This is why I love this movie, is because it's amazing and terrible at the same time, and everything I talk about that I enjoy about this movie is also why it's garbage.
I don't think it's garbage. I think it functionally works. I think it's a fun movie. It's a movie that always knows what it is. It's always entertaining. There's not a boring scene in this fucking movie. It is light and airy and just fucking goes for it. And the characters are likable enough. The characters are despicable enough. Shit goes down. There's, you want to see sharks eat people? Fuck, does this movie give you sharks eating people?
They even find a way to give a horrible death to Ada Turturro, who spends the entire movie on the surface. Like, she's nowhere near the sharks, and she gets blown up by a helicopter.
Fuck yeah.
Like, this movie hates people.
It does. It also apparently hates music, but that's a separate issue altogether.
Strong disagree. I think it loves music, and I think that song is People's Exhibit A of why it absolutely loves
music. They're coming for you like locusts, Brian.
Underwater locusts.
Underwater locusts.
Which was the name of my water polo team in high school, so clearly that rules. Yeah, so people, again, just getting chomped left and right in this film. There was, speaking of eat your whole fam, there was a subplot that got excised from this movie. There's a scene where Stellan Skarsgård lays a big kiss on one of the doctors in this movie, and it's kind of just from that hinted at that they had a relationship. Apparently there's a longer cut of this movie where not only did they have a relationship, but she was pregnant with his child, and Renny Harlin went, you know, maybe having a pregnant woman eaten by a shark is not super kosher, so they're just gonna leave that part out entirely.
What, you're gonna forget dessert?
To quote, just to make this worse, to quote Blade Trinity, ooh, a combo meal.
Why would you ever quote Blade Trinity?
Because there was no coming back from what you said, and I figured why not just pour some insult gravy on the country fried injury? That's what I was doing. Let's just do that. I love this movie. I will never not love too. This movie.
Yeah, this movie. I was so happy when you showed it because it was tough. In fact, it was the biggest pain in the ass getting home from that movie. I was so angry.
What? Because what, did you have to walk?
No. That was the day that because you showed it downtown. It was down just south of downtown on the same day as ACL Fest. And it was the day those 13 assholes decided to shut down the bridge in protest.
Oh, I didn't even hear about
it. They were protesting the Kavanaugh thing the day after he had been put in. And they thought, you know what? Let's close a bridge in a liberal city. Like, that'll show them. And I had to drove around for an hour and a half getting out of downtown trying to get.
That's why you should have stayed and gone to the highball with us, where I was literally going, I love beer. Beer is great.
Yeah, see, that would have been much more fun than driving around for an hour and a half. Yeah. So
I was doing my own Tom Kavanaugh impression and just loving beer.
Brett right. Kavanaugh, either.
Who's Tom Kavanaugh?
He's a coach. Actor?
Is he? I think he's a coach.
Tom Kavanaugh, isn't he the guy from Ed?
Yes. Yes, he is. And now I want to see him play Brett Kavanaugh in a biopic.
You know what he does? He's, you know, he gets kicked off the Supreme Court and has to go become a bowling alley lawyer.
Look, I wish I could wrangle this episode the way that Tom Jane wrangles sharks.
No.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
This episode has gotten away from me.
This is what happens when we record several things in a night and beer's involved.
This is very true. And I've been on this diet. I've not had beer in a while. And it's great. I don't know if you guys know.
I like beer.
I love beer.
Do you like beer?
Okay, I asked you if you drank a lot in high school, and you responded, I love beer. Okay, thanks. Yeah. By the end of this movie, you kind of want the sharks to get away because, frankly, where are they going to go? That's the thing that always bothered me about this movie. They're just going to go into the ocean. Like, where sharks live.
Unless they've developed a taste for human flesh.
They're sharks! Like, they're gonna eat... If they fucking eat somebody... If a regular, non-experimented-on shark eats a person...
I think the idea was that the scary thing about it was they were going to breed. It's essentially the piranha thing. Piranha. They're gonna breed with the other piranha, and then the seas will be overrun.
They're gonna breed with all those dummy sharks, and then you're gonna have just a race of super sharks. That's horrifying. Also, I never want to say this in the course of this episode. I want to make it very clear. This is my favorite Renny Harlin movie. It's not the best Renny Harlin movie.
No.
The best Renny Harlin movie is the reason that Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie is that he worked with him on Long Kiss Goodnight, yes, which is definitively the best Rennie Harlan movie that somehow we have never covered on this show. Have we covered a single Rennie Harlan movie on this show until now? We haven't done Nightmare 4 because I don't like Nightmare 4. We have not done Long Kiss Goodnight. We definitely haven't done Mindhunters. By the way, fucking Mindhunters. And I'm not talking about the show that everybody loves on Netflix. That's a movie that you should probably see, but is not good at all. Have you seen Mindhunters?
I have. I was actually, when I was working at 8 at Cool News, it's one of the first scripts that got passed to me before it came out. And so I was really excited to read this script to this movie before it came out.
And what did you think when you read that script? Could you use more sharks? Was that your first thought?
I was like, oh, so that's the ending you're going with?
It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him. It did not. Mindhunter.
Oh, you know what? We mentioned one of Rennie Harlan's movies a lot, though. We may not have covered one of his movies yet.
But which one do we mention a lot?
The Covenant.
Harry Potter can kiss my ass.
You're using the word "we" very liberally. I feel like that's a deep fried Cargill favorite.
But it's The Covenant.
Yeah. Sorry, weeaches.
And you would love to cover Cliffhanger.
This is totally fucking true. That is one of my favorite Die Hard ripoffs. And it's hilarious because...
You brought up Cliffhanger before.
It's hilarious because Rennie Harlan has such a weird relationship with the Die Hard franchise because he made Die Hard 2, which was really his chance to, I don't know, make a Die Hard movie. But then he went back twice and did a Die Hard movie again. The better version being Cliffhanger, in my opinion. The worse version being when he tried to remake Die Hard with a Vengeance with a WWE superstar and made 12 rounds, which is just Die Hard with a Vengeance with John Cena, which is a difficult thing to pull off for your cinematographer because no one can see him.
You can't see him. Yeah. And 12 rounds, never saw it.
You didn't see it?
I didn't see it.
Why did we do? We both did the hand in front of the face, and this is a podcast. Nobody can see what we're doing.
Because we're cracking each other up at this point. I'm shocked if anybody's still listening at this point. Like, we're just talking.
We have lost so much of the audience. This podcast is haunted. Yeah. So I love Deep Blue Sea. I don't think that's going to get past anybody as we wrap this up. The thing is, so many bad movie podcasts have covered this movie from an angle of it's terrible, blah, 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 blah. They're all right. They're all right in their criticisms. I will give them that. I just don't fucking care because it's got an amazing cast. It's got some great practical shit. Like, I don't care for the CG in this movie. I feel like the CG in this movie it was fine for the time, but now is what defines all of, like, the Sharknado movies. It is that level of CG.
Yeah.
But it's surrounded by a great cast and great practical work when they actually have, like, shark puppets. Those work so well that you forgive the fact that when they're CG, they look like garbage.
Well, but CG at that time wasn't there yet.
Right, but it's
we
like...
We thought it was amazing. We're like, oh my god, these sharks look real.
Look how fast those sharks are tearing Michael Rapaport in half, right? Like, that's impressive. But the far more impressive thing is when the sharks are practical in this movie and they look great.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I feel like the CG in this movie is what kind of gave us all of the Sci-Fi Channel movies. Like, their CG has never graduated past what this looks like. And they keep doing it. And you can't not see Sharknado when you see the CG sharks in this movie. But it's great. It's especially if you can kind of step out of yourself and look at this movie from the shark's perspective. It's kind of amazing. And I love it. I love the ending song. I love literally everything about this movie. I will watch it. It's back on Netflix, by the way, so it might be a daily view for me. It's one of my favorite junkie movies, and I'm so glad we got to talk about it.
You ate my bird.
Guys, I got nothing for the junk food pairing, so...
Oh, I do.
I'm glad you do.
Dude, it is a perfect omelet with two eggs, not three, and you don't use milk.
Amateurs use milk for density. This is a mistake! I love it. It is great.
You've got to eat a two-egg omelet with Deep Blue Sea. You've got to have Preacher's Omelet.
You know what you don't need to eat? My bird. You ate my bird, which is one of my favorite... Like, say all you want about Commando and all the one-liners in that movie. My favorite, I'm about to kill you one-liner, You ate my bird. Throws the Zippo, explodes the shark that just tried to cook him in his own oven. Like, God, this movie has so many great scenes.
It's just fun. Oh, it's just good fun.
It's a collection of, and I'm gonna suggest doing exactly what I have done tonight. Drink a bunch of beer, watch this movie, give over to it, and have the greatest time of your life. Like, this is just a fantastic junk food movie. And speaking of fantastic junk food, you can find all of our back catalog episodes on iTunes as well as on Spotify. Spotify, where you cannot, I will point out, find the song from this movie. I was very disappointed because on my way here, that's all I wanted to listen to on repeat, and it's not there. Spotify, you're letting me down, but we are available there, so we can let you down there too. And Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
On Instagram and Twitter, at Massawyrm, M-A-S-S-A-W-Y-R-M. And you can find my new podcast, Ride Along Podcast, over at ridealongpodcast.com or at ridealongpod on Twitter.
This is where you and David Chin just rewrite Deep Blue Sea.
Like that 20 times. Yeah, no, it's a 10 to 20 minute digestible little podcast where we talk about writing advice. And for those of you that want to be writers or those that want to learn about writing.
Is it as digestible as Michael Rapaport? That's what I need to know.
It's about half the size.
So it's a half a port. You said that already, didn't you? Did you say half a port already?
Yes. He becomes Michael Half-A-Port.
Hey-o! God damn it.
And you groaned at me for it.
No, and then I, you know what?
And then you used it. You stole it.
I recognized.
Bastardo.
I fessed up to stealing it as soon as I realized that's what had happened. So we're going to go ahead and end this episode and just remind you again, the deepest, bluest,
my hat.